Here's Meyer driving, gives it up to Mim. Mim wide open, hits the shot from left of the lane. Kylie Mim with her first bucket, and that's awesome to see on senior night as well. She's in the scoring column, and not only that, it's a huge basket for Beloit. Makes a two-possession game, 40-35, Lady Trojans.
That was a good senior night for the Beloit girls and boys. Five seniors for the girls, five seniors for the boys. Makes it pretty easy on senior night. Start all five.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes it pretty easy.
Nobody's going to be mad because there's six.
No, exactly. Yeah, how would you do that if you had like six, seven, or eight seniors? How
Most of the time, like, if I saw that scenario, it'd be like the senior that always starts doesn't start.
Yes, exactly.
Kind of like that.
Right.
Or, but, you know, the two seniors or something like that.
Right, but what if, it would be pretty weird to have, if we start five juniors and six seniors come off the bench, would be the problem there. But it worked out perfectly for the Beloit girls and boys last night. Girls beat Smith Center 52-49. It looks like wrapped up a number two seed for their sub-state. Smith Center girls have to go on the road. And the boys game, Beloit, Smith Center was really a good game until about 3 minutes left in the second quarter. And then Beloit was able to get a comfortable lead, although Smith Center hung around. And then the Beloit boys pulled away in the fourth quarter, won 75-54. Hayden Budke with 18. He was one of the five seniors for Beloit last night. Hudson Smith with 10. They were our co-NCKSSports.com athletes of the game. And another senior, Colin Chandler, got the H&R block of the game. All the seniors played well, and it was a solid night for Beloit. And Trenton Colby and Colby Benoit, they had 12 each. Colby had 4 3-pointers to lead Smith Center, who's now 9-10. The Beloit boys are 19-1, ranked second in the state. 19-1 their record. They've now won 12 in a row, going in a sub-set play coming up on Tuesday, where they'll host Clay Center at 7 o'clock at Beloit. It looks like the Beloit girls will play Rock Creek on Monday at 7 o'clock, although that's not official until the brackets come out from Keisha later today. In the Beloit girls game, they had Breezy Schroeder, a senior, was our NCKSports.com athlete game. She had 10, Jessica Meyer 10, Sydney Barrett 10. Shea Larson was in foul trouble all night long, but still scored 14, 8 in the final quarter. And Smith Center was led by Bree Freeling with 13, and Maydu had 10, as Smith Center girls now 10-10 on the year, and Beloit girls improved to 14-6. But I must say, I can't lie to you, the first quarter last night watching the Beloit-Smith Center girls was extremely hard to watch, and I wasn't the only one that thought that. It was, I don't know if both teams thought they weren't going to play and they weren't ready to play. I don't know if it just was one of those things where I don't know. It was. What was crazy about it was there were 15 turnovers in the first quarter. Beloit had 9. Smith Center had 6. But here's the thing: you would expect, if a team's gonna have that many turnovers in the first quarter, you'd expect what?
Very, very low score.
Yeah, but what would cause turnovers?
Good defense.
Well, full court pressure, trapping defense, usually aggressive man to man.
Yeah.
Both teams were in a zone. One was in a 1-3-1 to start. The other was in a 2-3. And there was no full court pressure until, like, late in the first quarter. That's what blew me away was these turnovers. So many of those turnovers last night by both teams, and trust me, I'm not picking on one team. They both did it.
Yeah.
Were just completely unforced. I mean, just making bad passes, bad decisions, not fundamentally sound, trying to throw over people that are taller than you, trying to force the ball inside when they're covered from behind and in front and double-teamed. Just simply throwing the ball, airmailing it out of bounds. I don't know if the snow – there was no snow on the court as far as I know. There was no ice. But it was – and I know it was kind of a weird day probably because Smith Center's like, are we going to play or are we not going to play? Boy, it's probably thinking the same thing. But at the same time, I mean, once you're on the floor, I mean, it just was weird. It was – the turnover bug was out and about last night in the first quarter of the game. And then it calmed down somewhat the rest of the game. It wasn't quite as bad, although both teams had nearly 20 turnovers in the game. But what was really amazing to me about that was – that's what you expect to see from teams that are 2-14, 4-13. You don't expect to see that from two teams that had winning records going in last night,
especially in the last game of the season.
Late in the year,
early in the year,
when they both have so much
of different teams,
they both had a lot to play for. Smith Center's trying to get a home game in the first round of sub-state. Beloit girls trying to move up from a 3 to a 2 seed, and so there's a lot to play for. And maybe the teams, both of them, pressed a little bit, were trying too hard early in the game. Perhaps that was the case, but it was just a weird situation to watch because both teams, I think, are better than that.
Yeah.
And they both, like, after the first 3 minutes, I think Beloit had 5 turnovers and no shots on goal. And Smith Center had 1 shot on goal and 3 or 4 turnovers. And you sit up there and you're like, normally if you have 5 turnovers right off the bat, you're down big time.
Uh-huh.
And And after everything that happened at the end of the first quarter, it was 8-7.
Yeah.
Because neither team would take advantage of the other's turnovers. It was really wild. But then it settled down. I'm like, please, this has to get cleaned up. And it was better the rest of the way. But there are games like that. I mean, you see that all the time where one team is a really good shooting team and they can't buy a bucket. They can't make a layup. They can't make a free throw. Nothing falls. You have games where it's like you're playing with just your thumbs and you can't hold on to the ball. I mean, it happens. But last night, that was just a rough start for both girls' teams. But then eventually it turned into be a very competitive game down the stretch, and Blake girls won 52-49. I'll say this right now. I don't think I'm telling Coach Lynn or Coach Remus anything they don't already know. Both those girls' teams are going to have to play much better if they're going to go anywhere in sub-state based on how they played last night in the first quarter. Now, like I said, things got better second, third, and fourth. Some good things, some bad things. That happens throughout the game. And nobody's perfect. People make mistakes. But it's how you deal with those mistakes. How do you bounce back from them? Do you hang your head and not run down the floor? Or do you make a mistake and hustle and get back? And I know there was a play that really exemplified that last night. Trendy Wagner, a senior, made a bad pass, which there were quite a few of those last night. Smith Center boys had a lot of turnovers, by the way, too, against Beloit. But she hustled down the floor and knocked the ball away from behind or got a block shot. I can't remember exactly what it was. And she saved the possession.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how many times, and I'm sure you see it, how many times do you see young people or even adults as well, they make a mistake in life or they make a mistake on a basketball floor or on a baseball game, on a football field, and then they get down on themselves, they hang their head, they mope, they pout, they start wanting to cry, and then what happens? They make another mistake.
Yeah.
Come on, play along with me. You've seen this before, haven't you?
Yeah.
Okay, they make another mistake, and it snowballs.
It's like they stop. You
right,
know,
they stop.
Life stops at that moment,
right.
You know?
Like you make a bad pass, you just stop and stand there. Well, that you don't get back on defense. Now you've made one mistake, you turn it into two. So you don't get back down the floor. And you've also upset your teammates who are hustling back, going, why aren't you hustling back? You know, every single person makes a mistake. Every single game, I would be willing to bet you, every single player on the team at one point or another makes a mistake, whether they run the wrong route on a football field and was set up for another play, whether or not they didn't box out, whether or not they didn't make a good pass, whether they didn't move their feet defensively, whether they didn't listen to the coach and hold the ball for the final shot, whatever it might be. Everybody makes a mistake in every single game. I can tell you the Beloit boys are 19-1. Last night, I can assure you, the coaching staff could go look at that film, even though Beloit boys won by 21, I can guarantee you they can find a mistake by every single player that played last night. I guarantee it.
Oh, yeah.
Because nobody's perfect. But how do you deal with those mistakes? So if you have a lot of turnovers in a game, whether it be a girls game, a boys game, how do you deal with that? If you have a rough first half and you have 5 turnovers as the point guard, how do you deal with that? Are you going to let that turn into 10? Or are you going to be benched? Or are you going to come through and say, you know what, I'm not having this anymore. I got to get more focused. I got to make better passes. Or if I'm a person taking bad shots, okay, I got to clean this up. I got to quit taking bad shots. I got to be within the offense. Or I'm in foul trouble, okay. I've got to have to be a little bit more cautious if I'm in foul trouble so I can stay on the floor, you know. And then sometimes when you're in foul trouble, the whistle finds you. You see this all the time. There'll be a night where all year long you might not be in foul trouble. It happened when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And then one night I'm playing the exact same defense and somehow the whistle finds me and I have 3 fouls. I'm like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
And then you're being safe and you just put your hand straight up and you get a 4th foul. Like, well, what am I supposed to do? Just let them lay it in? And sometimes the whistle finds you. But I will tell you this, when you make a mistake and then you don't hustle back and you hang your head, guess what will happen? That mistake will be amplified because it will turn into points the other way for a team.
Yeah.
It will hurt your team. So the moral of the story I'm trying to get across to young people out there and adults as well is when you make a mistake, don't beat yourself up about it so badly that you make another mistake because of the first mistake. You know? That's the thing. Now, if you continuously make the same mistake over and over, you got to figure something out because you're not learning from your mistakes. They say you learn or should learn from your mistakes, and there's some people that don't learn from their mistakes. They could easily solve some of the mistakes they've had by taking care of something, and they don't. And so it's about maturity. As you grow older, you hopefully develop that maturity to handle things, whether you're a junior high person, a high school kid, or whether or not you're in college, or you're 43 like myself, which I make mistakes every day. But how do you deal with that? You know, if I mess up on the radio and I just go quiet, This is going to be a bad radio station because it'll be dead air. Because, I mispronounced the name. Well, that's it. I'm not going to call the game the rest of the night.
Yeah.
You just can't. You have to overcome adversity. That's why I think sports and extracurricular activities are great for young people. You have to overcome adversity. You know, maybe you're not an athlete. Maybe you're just and I don't want to say just a. If you are in a debate or forensics or you're in music or you've got a band solo, whatever it may be, you know, you make a mistake. You hit a bad note on the clarinet. You can't rewind it.
No.
Okay? You just got to then get through it and try to get the best rating you can at the music festival, you know?
Yeah.
It applies to anything we do in life. So I think one thing we got to remember as broadcasters, as parents, as officials, as fans, and I think we forget about it, and I'm guilty of it as well as anybody else, is that all of these young people put themselves out there knowing that they're going to fail at times. Mm-hmm. They put themselves out there. And if you, and this goes back to what Tim Tebow said yesterday that we had on the show, if you're afraid to fail, you're really going to have a hard time succeeding. You cannot go back and have all these regrets because you at least got to try. And if you're worried about failing all the time, you have this fear of failure. Oh my God, don't throw me the basketball. I'm going to turn it over. Well, now you're already defeated. You've already lost that battle. You can't think that way. And if you're worried about, well, I don't want to go out for wrestling because I don't think that's cool and my friends aren't. Or I'm not going to go out for basketball because everybody's playing volleyball. Or I'm not going to go out for volleyball because everybody's playing for basketball. Or I'm not going to play football because some of my friends aren't playing football and they'd make fun of me if I go out or if I don't go out. Whatever way you want to look at it. You just got to have the intestinal fortitude to say, do I want to do that? Are my parents going to let me do it? And I have the freedom to do it? I'm not going to worry about what all my friends think. It's something I want to do. And yeah, I may fail. I may get run over like a Brinks truck on the football field. But I'm going to at least try.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we forget is that all of these young people out there in these sports that we cover or we go and attend as fans, they put themselves out there to fail. I can tell you, free throw contest. My son's been a part of that for 3 or 4 years. And there are some kids that do not do the free throw contest because of they're afraid they're going to lose. They're afraid they're going to embarrass themselves. Or they just don't think they're good enough. You know what? I encourage my son, and he's been successful in the free throw contest. But I encourage my son to do it not because I was like, oh, you got to go out there and win. The reason I encouraged him to do it was I did free throw contest when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And I only won one contest. I only made it to regionals one time. That's it. I lost always to Mikey Weber. Still hate that kid, but I'm kidding. But Mikey Weber almost...
With the awkward shot.
Yeah, with the awkward shot, Mikey Weber would usually beat me in the local competition, okay? But did I quit trying? I kept trying each year, and he beat me 3 out of 4 times. I beat him one time, and I made it on to regionals 1 year. I never made it to state. But guess what? I ended up being and I'm not trying to brag. I'm just stating a fact. I was an 80% foul shooter in high school. I was a really good foul shooter. And there is no doubt in my mind, I knew it then and I know it today, that going through those free throw competitions helped me become a better free throw shooter.
Oh, yeah.
Why would you think I would say that?
Because when you're there by yourself at those free throw contests, there's a lot of pressure when all those people are watching you. And that helped me, obviously, too. Mm-hmm. Of course, I worked on free throws every single day outside of the gym too.
Right.
But when you're in there by yourself, that's the loneliest place you can be, by the way. In a regular game shooting technical free throws or at the Knights mm-hmm. of Columbus free throw contest, uh-huh. that's the loneliest place you can be.
Mm-hmm.
Just by yourself shooting free throws. So you learn how to deal with that.
Exactly.
And you get better.
Exactly.
And now you can go, and I'm sure you were too. I was a technical shooter on our team.
I was too.
And so if there's a tee, I'm going to the free throw line and I'm probably going to make most of them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I would say I was probably like 82-83% free throw shooter when I got the chance to go to the line.
Right.
And I always made fun of one of my buddies at St. John's. He was like a 67% free throw shooter. I'll call him out. It was Luke Eilert.
Okay. All right.
I was like, Luke, you're shooting 67%. That's not acceptable.
Yeah.
He's like, well, what did you shoot? I was like, probably about 82 or 83. He's like, oh. Because he knew I wasn't going to lie to him about something like that. But, yeah, it is. It's you gain everything by doing things like that. That helps your confidence when you go to the free throw line.
Right.
When you're 12, 13, 14 and start learning that early.
Yeah.
And now I can go to the line and feel confident no matter what the case is when I'm in the middle of a game. Now, obviously, sometimes your fatigue factor will set in at the free throw line every now and then, but you don't have it a Knights of Columbus type situation because you're not running around and being drained or anything like that. But, yeah, that's definitely that's what helped it for me, and I think you're probably going the same way with that.
I would encourage every single coach that's out there listening right now to encourage your kids to do the free throw contest. Not because you want them all to win, because that's impossible. But I'm telling you, it helps. Because you put yourself out there, allowing yourself to fail. Well, there's only one winner in each age group. And the reason I encouraged my son to do it is because I knew how much it helped me as a free throw shooter being out there. And I was nervous. I was out on an island at the age of, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. I was nervous. And, I'll be honest, I probably choked a couple times and missed some free throws because I couldn't block out the nerves or whatever else. But guess what? By the time I was 15, 16, 17, 18 in high school, and I got and there was a technical free throw, and I was the one that always went up there and shot them, or if the game was on the line, I wanted the ball every single time because I knew I would make them. I did not go up to the line going, oh, God, I hope I can just make one out of two. I never went to the line thinking that.
That thought process never entered my mind. No. I was mad if I missed. If I missed one.
Here was my thinking on free throws. They're called free.
Exactly.
That was my thinking. I want to go to the line. And selfishly, I was like, plus I get more points to my line. Why not? I go up to the foul line. I get two technical free throws.
Free points.
Why not? Yeah. Oh, we're up by five. Okay.
I have to work for these. I get them.
Right. I get fouled late in the game. I'm the best foul shooter on the team. I'm helping my team win, and I'm adding to I'm padding my stats. I'm 8 out of 9 free throws in the fourth quarter. Suddenly I go from 14 points to 23 and we win and everybody's happy.
Yeah.
I always love that. But I'm telling you, the free throw contest helped me to get to that point when I was in high school. And yes, I practiced a lot.
Yeah.
That helps.
You have to do that.
But you can
too.
Practice all you want, but if you don't, if you're not in those game situations, it's different than just practicing on your goal by yourself and shooting 25 in a row. You got to be able to practice and, I got fouled. I'm in the middle of being really hot and bothered and I'm tired. And you got to go up and shoot two free throws. You got to simulate a 1-1 situation, or you're down one and it's front and a 1-1, and try to do that on the park playground or out at your farm or wherever it may be so that you can be ready for it if it happens in a game. You got to practice these situations, and a lot of this is mental as well. And free throw shooting is as mental as anything else out there. And so it goes back to my point. You have to be willing to fail to succeed. And I don't know if it's just not promoted well enough. I don't know if people are just scared to try. But when there's hardly anybody at free throw competitions at the local level, and even at the district level, I think that's sad. I'm just going to say it. It's sad because I think a lot of kids are just like, well, I'm not going to win. Why am I going to try? Or I'm not a great foul shooter, so I'm not going to put myself out there because people are going to laugh at me. No, they're not. Nobody's going to laugh at you.
No, not there.
I know a couple kids that aren't good foul shooters that did the free throw competition. I have more admiration for them than my own kid from that standpoint because they know that maybe they're not the best foul shooter, but they're willing to try and put themselves in that pressure situation, and I think it'll help them down the line. Uh-huh. And that's the whole point of this whole story I'm talking about. When you make a mistake, you need to learn from that mistake. If you don't, it's going to snowball another mistake. But you have to put yourself out there in order to make the mistake. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I think we forget sometimes these kids are putting themselves out there to fail, and they're going to succeed. They're going to fail. Sometimes they're going to succeed more than they fail. Sometimes they're going to fail more than they succeed. But you got to put yourselves out there and allow yourself to grow as an individual. And I applaud all those young men and women that put themselves out there no matter what activity it is. Like I said, music, forensics, debate, wrestling, basketball, baseball, football, whatever it may be. I really, really admire them for doing that. I will say this. I'll go one step further. I really admire the people that put themselves out there to be officials.
Oh, without question.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Those officials, God bless them. They're going to get yelled at all the time, and people are going to always argue with the call. You're going to make one side happy and one side unhappy almost every single time. And guess what? You're putting yourself out there to be yelled at. That is not a glamorous job.
No.
And yet we tend to forget as fans and broadcasters and parents and coaches what those guys or gals are going through, and they officiate and go, wow, they're really putting themselves out there. Could I do their job? No. Same thing with coaches.
Yeah.
In order to coach, you got to be willing to fail. And trust me, you're not going to win every game as a coach. You're going to blow it. You're going to have a game where you have a 10-point lead at some point in your career, and your team's going to blow it. And you're going to sleep? No, you're not. You're not going to sleep. You're going to have a sleepless night. You're going to focus on that loss more than the 10 wins. You could be 10-1, and you're going to focus on that one loss. People don't understand that if they're not tied to coaching and athletics, but the coach is putting him or herself out there, willing to fail, because, and hopefully they can learn from those mistakes. So the next time they're up 10 with 2 minutes to go, they have something better maybe in regards to an offensive set, communicate better with their team, and it won't happen the next time. So I'm not just talking about high school kids. I'm talking across the board in life. You have to be able to deal with mistakes, be willing to put yourself out there to make a mistake, and then try to succeed after dealing with failure. And that's what Tim Tebow was talking about yesterday. If you're scared of messing up, if you're scared of failure, you are in big trouble.
Yeah, and I would expand upon that when we're talking about the kids is if you have positive role models to look up to like that, like if
people encourage you.
I can look at you know, these coaches in our area, and I can understand really quickly what coaches encourage what you're talking about for kids to go out and put themselves out there. What coaches I know have done that in the past and have failed before, but they've gained and grown from it.
Absolutely.
And the good teams that I see around here are without question a reflection of what their coach puts on them.
I agree.
And what their coach is willing to put out there and do and make and obviously show that you're gonna fail. You're not gonna go out here and succeed in everything that you do, but you're gonna grow and learn from it if you fail. And every team that I see that I've covered that has had success, whether it's on the football field, basketball court, track and field, anything like that, their coach, I think, is really a reflection of that. And I can't think of any team that's had a lot of success that they don't have that same kind of coach with the same kind of attitude toward everything.
I would agree with you.
I can't. I mean, there's some teams that are gonna slide and win a lot of games off of talent.
Sure.
But when it comes down to winning championships and winning at the right time, those attitudes are the ones that come out. And you can see it. I mean, I cover St. John's Tipton a lot. You know, Coach Christine and Coach Bergman are both guys that I think are just like what we're talking about. Put yourself out there. You're not gonna have success every time you step on the floor.
Right.
There's gonna be things that are gonna go wrong for you, but they instill, you know, defense into their teams, and this is gonna travel. This is what you can do.
Right.
It's not ever gonna falter if you do it right.
Right.
Now you're gonna have a bad night. The whistle's gonna catch you. You're gonna start missing shots.
Right.
Things are gonna happen, but you know, instill the right attitude in everything that you do, and things are gonna go well for you. And then on the flip side, you see. And I don't just blame this on coaches, but seasons that are going bad, like last night with Palco, they're 1-15 going in. You could tell. You could tell this was their last game of the season. They were ready to go home.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to put them out there publicly like that and say that, but you could just tell. I mean,
when you're watching, bad year.
You can see it. You're 1-15.
Sure.
Things don't go right early for you. You're just,
right.
Let's just go home. This is not what we want. So, you know, you see it on the flip side, too, where, you know, those failures can turn into, it can snowball and turn into things that you don't want. But, you know, you do have to have the right attitude and the right people leading your team. And that's officials, too.
Yes.
You know, most of the officials that I know that are really successful are the ones, and
they
I know
communicate
with
the coaches.
I know personally, too, have the same kind of attitude. You know, I'm going to make a mistake.
Right.
I might get yelled at, but I got to drown it out. I got to move on to the next play, because if I focus on this one, then I'm not going to be doing my job the rest of the way.
That's right.
The good ones that I know, which there's a lot of good ones out here really that have done it for a long time, and you understand where they're coming from, and they're consistent with what they're doing for the most part. And so you see that, and you understand that you obviously have to have a thick skin to do that. And I know some of them people had success when they were on the court in high school and doing their thing, too.
I think it's a good point you bring up in regards to having positive role models, because you can look at parents. I mean, a parent or a coach. Listen, you know, and we all have our times where we're not the best parents. We've probably had a bad moment. Coach is the same way. But I can tell you that if you are a coach or a parent that gets all over your kid for making a mistake for the first time, okay, you're not helping.
No.
But, if your kid makes the same mistake multiple times, that's what drives coaches and parents nuts.
Yeah.
Because you're supposed to learn from your mistakes. So if you're running a set play and for four straight times you continuously run it wrong and you've gone in through in practice over and over and over and then you can't run it in the game, the coach is going to probably pull you out, and he's probably going to have some choice words for you.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not going to be super encouraging. But the best coaches, in my opinion, are the ones that allow a player to make a mistake And maybe it's after the mistake number two or three they pull him.
Yeah.
But they don't just pull him. You put Johnny into the game, and he travels. And you yank him right back out. And I've seen coaches do that. And I'm like, that's no good.
No,
it just kills the kid's confidence. And it's the same way as a parent. You know, if your kid does something, it's one thing if your kid does something for the first time and you know he knows better. That's different. But if your kid makes a mistake that's just an innocent mistake, and then you're all over him. And maybe you, as a parent, you're in a bad mood. And then you're like, oh, God, I shouldn't have yelled at him. I was in a bad mood, and I took it out on my kid. You know, you got to think about those things as parents. And I'm guilty of messing up and making mistakes as a parent. I got to learn from that myself. So it is interesting, but I think you make a very good point that, you know, and maybe that's why some of these kids aren't doing some of these things, because of their parents not providing them with the encouragement that they need. And in some cases, they can't get them to all these activities. I get that.
Sure, yeah.
But if some of these kids that aren't involved in anything, it's like, man, you need to really, some of that is a social aspect too, for them to be with teammates and this and that, and build camaraderie and chemistry. And if one thing goes wrong for your kid, you immediately just pull the kid off the team. You're not helping your kid. I know somebody really well that it's just like, boom, the kid goes out. Well, somebody makes a joke about something, or this kid's unhappy, or the first day of practice was too rough. And instead of making the kid at least go back to practice for the rest of the week and give it at least more of a chance, they're like, okay, well, you tried it, you're done. It's like, really, what are you teaching the kid from that standpoint? To quit. Yeah. That's what you taught him. Yeah. I mean, at least you allowed him to go out. At least they tried. But at the same time, don't you have to give it more than a day, one practice? Oh, that was really hard. Well, it's only going to get harder, but you know, guess what? That's what life's like.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and I don't have my own kids to expand on what you're talking about there, but I have nephews, and my oldest one's a freshman in high school right now. And so I try to be like a, cause dad's on him to, you know, not on him.
Right.
You know,
parents are harder than an uncle or aunts. Yeah.
But dad's telling them the right things to do.
Right.
And so when Dylan says that, when dad says, hey, you got to eat right, you got to be healthy, you got to be in shape for basketball season.
I just said that to my kid last night. He's eating all this sugar. I was like, you got to eat better. Yeah,
well,
be a better athlete.
And, you know, Dylan goes to a practice at 2 o'clock, doesn't eat breakfast or lunch before he goes there. And he's like, and then he wonders why he gets sick and gets a headache at practice and stuff like that, you know. And so dad's telling him these things, and I try to reinforce that as an uncle. You know, I try to be a little bit nicer about it and say, hey, bud.
And you're a different voice.
He responds to me better.
Because you're a different
voice. Because I'm the cool uncle, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like,
and you're always your dad.
And that's
so
what I'm
like
talking about. Whether I have kids or you have kids or not, you can still be a positive role model for these kids and understand that, hey, you do this. And, you know, I encourage him whenever I can. I sent that video of Tim Tebow to my nephew. Mm-hmm. I was like, there's going to be doubters out there, but you know what? Those are the ones that couldn't do it.
That's right.
And just keep doing you and keep continuing to be what you are and improve.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to do those kind of things and be a positive role model for kids as well. And I think I try to do that with a lot of kids around here too, that I've known their parents for a while. And you start building those relationships. And I always want to be an encouragement and not a detriment to what these kids are trying to do and trying to grow up. But it's fun for me to have a part in that. And even though I don't have my own kids, can come from a different perspective of it and say, hey, listen to your dad and your coach, because they're both telling you the same thing, you know, things like that. And it's a different voice, and they'll listen to it because it's not what they hear every day. Everybody out there, I think, could benefit and become a positive role model, no matter if you're involved a lot in the kid's life or not.
Yeah, you can. I've joked about this. A friend of mine, him and I coach together, and both our kids like to play basketball. And so he can go tell his son over and over the same thing, and then I go tell him it, and he might do it because it's a different voice. But I'm saying the exact same thing.
Exactly.
Same thing applies. He, the other coach I coach with, can say the exact same thing I've said to my oldest son 1,000 times. He can say it, and my son will then do it. And it's the exact same message, but it comes from a different person and a different voice. And sometimes that's all it takes to maybe get through to people. And I think that's where Tim Tebow's so special, because how many of us probably already said what Tim Tebow said yesterday in one way or another, but then Tim Tebow says it, and you're like, oh, well, now it makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't believe mom and dad?
You think
mom and dad are just full of baloney? We're not.
It's like, I've always thought that, but I haven't been able to put it in the same words like that publicly like Tim Tebow could.
Well, dad, you're not a professional athlete. Why do I listen to you? Tim Tebow said it. Well, now, Tim Tebow, like, well, he's not your father. Yeah. It's interesting. It is. That's a good conversation. We weren't planning on going there.
No,
but
we
did.
You never know what's going to happen.
You never know with this show. We do not rehearse it. We don't have like a major rundown of what we're going to hit. I mean, we have a bit of one.
Yeah.
But just remember that as a fan, and I'm talking to myself too as a broadcaster. As a fan, as a broadcaster, as a parent, as a coach, whatever the case would be, yeah, official too, is remember these kids are putting themselves out there knowing they're going to fail at times and they're going to succeed as well. And that's the thing, learning through your adversity, overcoming adversity, whether it be a turnover, lots of turnovers, whether it be not getting a rebound, whether missing a key shot, whether getting in foul trouble, whether running the wrong route on the football field, whether making a bad move late in a wrestling match that you had won and you blew it. Well, you know, that's going to stick with you, and it should. If you're a competitive person, it should stick with you. It should make you mad. It should make you work even harder. But if your response is to go into a shell and not even try anymore, then that's not the right way to respond to it. Trust me, we've all been there, right?
Yes.
All right. Now, we talked about Beloit's games last night on senior night over Smith Center. There was a lot of regional basketball last night. Dusty's going to update you on that.
Yes, Lakeside, again, boys winning over Palco 56-20. Palco hit a three to start the game, and then Lakeside reeled off 19 straight points to lead 19-3 after one. And the outcome of this one was never in doubt. Again, 56-20, the final of the running clock in the fourth quarter. Lakeside improved to 11-9 as Mason Dusky led the way to 14 points. Devin Crawford had 10. Dusky, the athlete of the game. Crawford got the block of the game and the connection of the game from H&R Block and Cunningham Telephone Cable, respectively, there. So, again, 56-20 was the final. Palco, with their 20 points, only two players scored. Micah Thompson had 13 points to lead the Roosters. As we mentioned, again, Lakeside moves on to the semifinals coming up on Friday, where they will face Stockton in that semifinal matchup. Stockton winning over Hill City 53-50. And Logan beat Thunder Ridge on the top side of the bracket 59-44. So Logan will face Osborne coming up on Friday as well. 6 o'clock for Logan Osborne and 7:30 for Lakeside Stockton coming up here on Friday night. Also on Friday, there will be the Solomon boys regional semifinals. Last night's game, Solomon beat Pike Valley in the first round 47-46 to move on to a matchup at 7:30 on Friday with St. John's Tipton. Games on Z96.3 is the plan right now from Solomon. And then Rock Hills winning 63-38 over Lincoln last night. Derek Dillard, a career-high 34. Davion McDonald had 11 and Noah Williams 10. And the Southern Cloud boys beat Tescott 54-15. So Southern Cloud and Rock Hills play at 6 o'clock on Friday in Solomon. So that's a look at the immediate area regionals that happened last night. That Sylvan Lucas regional, by the way, their game, we're trying to find out who Sylvan Lucas is going to play in the next round. Well, they'll have to wait until tonight. Wilson and Lacrosse was postponed to tonight at 5:30 in Wilson. So we'll see what happens with that one and move on. All those brackets, by the way, are posted at ncksports.com. And whenever everything's released, that same link will take you to the sub-state brackets here for 3A and 2A coming up here today as well.
All right, and then we'll have the basketball locker room chats tonight.
Yeah. Tonight we talk to the head coaches of Beloit, Osborne, Smith Center, Lincoln, and Thunder Ridge, beginning around 5:10 here this evening. So also always online at katycountry94.com, and then at the podcast, if you ever miss them, you can't catch them live on the radio.
Well, state wrestling reports coming up Friday and Saturday, beginning at 10:30 in the morning on Friday. Until done, we'll have to intersperse some of that reporting during some of our basketball, weather permitting, coming up on Friday and Saturday. All righty. We go into the Big 12, where if I'm an Iowa State Cyclone fan, I am bald right now. And the reason being is I pull all my hair out. What? Listen, I'm not even an Iowa State fan, and I'm ticked off. Because I'm like, what are you doing? I mean, you ugh, I can't even talk. I'm stuttering. You crush Kansas at home. Next game, you lose a game you shouldn't. I forgot who they played, but they lost.
That was at Baylor.
That was at Baylor, okay. and Baylor was struggling at the time.
Yeah.
You go into Baylor, you lose. Okay, so what happens later on in the year? You're at home, and it's TCU hasn't won a road game all year. You give up 92, and you lose to TCU. Well, clearly they have no chance in Manhattan. Go to Manhattan, hit 14 three-pointers, win by 14, beat the top team in the Big 12. 78-64, Iowa State must win. They're back in the race. Good deal. We got a home game against Baylor. Then we go to TCU. That's winnable, even though we lost at home to TCU. So, whoops. Iowa State lost last night at home again. 73-69 to Baylor. What's that line from that movie? Well, then just cross him off the list then.
We'll cross him off then.
Then just cross him off. So Iowa State, here we go. I'm writing it down. And I'm crossing them off. What list do I have? Big 12 teams that can still win the Big 12 title. Iowa State. Checked off that list. Nope. This is my thinking. See if you agree. You don't deserve to win the Big 12 when you lose at home to TCU and Baylor. You don't deserve to win the Big 12 when you give up 92 points at home to TCU. You could argue you don't deserve the big you don't deserve to win the Big 12 when you lose at West Virginia, which Kansas did.
Or if you lose by 20 to Texas at home, of course, those are different.
Well, but Texas has actually got a winning record in the Big 12, so that's not as bad a loss as you could say. And they are a tournament team. But West Virginia is not going to be a tournament team. No. This is why K-State deserves to win the Big 12. I'm not saying they're going to for sure, but this is why K-State deserves to win the Big 12. Many years, we're talking about Kansas, winning the road games, holding serve at home. Now, K-State hasn't held serve at home. They lost at home to Iowa State. They lost at home to Texas. But they've made up for that by going 6-1 on the road in Big 12 play. Kansas has not played well on the road. They're always good, of course, at home. Texas Tech, I'd have to look at their schedule. They've lost to K-State. They lost to Kansas. I don't know if they have a horrible loss. But to me, this is where it should be. K-State, Tech, and Kansas are the top three teams, and they're the most deserving of winning the Big 12. Iowa State just proved they don't deserve to win it again last night. You can get a big win, but if you're going to be a conference championship type of team, you have to follow that big win with another win. And that's something that K-State was able to do. They beat Kansas, and we talked about it at the time. Why does Kansas win the Big 12 every year? Because a team knocks off Kansas, and they turn around and lay a big fat egg. Kansas State then went to Baylor, who was right there at the top of the standings, or near the top of the standings, wins at Baylor, turn around without Cartier Jada, they win at Texas. And then on top of that, they followed that up with a win West Virginia after they lost at home to Iowa State. The point is, K-State hasn't fallen victim to what many, many other teams that are vying for the Big 12 conference title in years past against Kansas have done. And that's, I don't want to say choke, but give it right back. And that's what Iowa State's done multiple times this year. Crossed him off the list then.
Just this year either.
And they were back in. I know they do it every year. Them and Baylor typically do it every year. Texas Tech, it kind of got an asterisk because Keenan Evans got hurt last year. You take away your star point guard, that hurts you. Or they probably would have at least got a share of the title last year. If not, stop Kansas' streak. But listen, the three teams at the top, K-State at 10-3, Texas Tech, KU 9-4, and they play each other in Lubbock on Saturday. Those three teams are the most deserving of the Big 12 title. And quite honestly, when you look at the records and the breakdown, Kansas State's the most deserving of those three right now.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. K-State doesn't normally do this kind of thing on the road, and that's what's making this special. What they're doing is they're going out and winning the road games when they need to. There was a breakdown like the first 3 or 4 years. Bruce Weber's road record was just terrible in the Big 12. But in the last two, it's flipped. It's changed. And then this year, obviously, it's changed when you're going 6-1. Now you need to make sure you have to couple that with holding serve at home.
Right.
So they can't lose another home game.
Right.
If they want to get what they want, if they want that Big 12 championship, I'm pretty confident of that. They need to win out at home to feel comfortable about that, I think.
Well, they could lose one home game and then got to win every road game.
Well, yeah.
Which win at Kansas would be one of those. Kansas,
so that's right. What, you know, it's in your mind sure. Where Kansas hasn't lost at home in the conference or anywhere
right.
All season. They haven't lost at home. So
right.
That's where it's creeping into your mind. You know, if you go ahead and just win your home games, you can still afford to lose to KU and have a chance at least at a share of this Big 12 title. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing is you can't falter at home, and they have twice.
But they're 6-1 on the road to make up for it.
The first time was just a completely different team, though.
Right.
Without Dean Wade, without Kamau Stokes, that you figure they're going to struggle a little bit there. But now you just take care of business is basically what I'm saying for K-State. And I agree with you. I think they're the most deserving team right now because they've been the most consistent.
Exactly. And I would say Texas Tech is the next one on that line ahead of Kansas because Texas Tech, their loss is at home to Iowa State. No harm in that. I mean, Iowa State won at K-State. Iowa State is a good team. They're just inconsistent. They lost at Baylor. There's no shame in that, okay? They lost at Kansas. So obviously, there's no shame in that. And they lost at K-State. So they don't have a bad loss in conference.
No.
whereas KU does. They lost that West Virginia earlier in the year, and I know that was a different West Virginia team at the time, although they weren't exactly great at that time either. So Kansas has a really bad loss. K-State doesn't in conference. Now, K-State has bad losses to Tulsa and A&M, but those are not in conference. We're talking the Big 12 title. So we'll see how it plays out. And K-State, of course, has got a very winnable game at home against Oklahoma State this weekend. And, you know, the Texas Tech KU winner is going to end up being, of course, probably the team that's with K-State to the very end. And I think a lot of K-State fans are just expecting KU to find a way to win that game, even though they struggle on the road. And if KU wins that, and then KU beats K-State Monday night in Lawrence, then I can virtually assure you everybody's going to say, well, the streak is going to continue. But if KU loses at Texas Tech, they might still be able to come back, beat K-State, and still be in the mix, but they're going to need a lot more help. So this game for Kansas at Texas Tech, and the same thing at Texas Tech, they can't afford to lose at home when you have this opportunity. So this is just an unbelievably, I mean, super large game coming up Saturday, primetime at 7 o'clock, Texas Tech hosting Kansas, both teams ranked in the top 15 in the country, and that should be a good one. And really, honestly, it's almost like K-State is the heavyweight champion, which they're not, but it's almost like they're on the side here waiting the winner to who's going to really push them to the very end of this Big 12 race. And the winner of Texas Tech KU is going to be the team that's going to probably be there to the very, very end and battling K-State the very final game of the year.
Oh, yeah, without question.
And I think K-State fans would obviously like it to be Texas Tech instead of Kansas, because you're done with Tech.
Yeah.
You still got to go to Kansas. All right, it's good to be Manny Machado. Eric Hosmer is a member of the San Diego Padres, a former Royal who signed a big contract last year. What was it, 7 years, $144 million? Hosmer has asked us the other day, what would it be like? What do you think if Machado signed with the Padres? Here's what Hosmer said.
We've all been practicing today, obviously. We've all kind of heard what's been going on. And, you know, all we can say is obviously he's a guy we'd love to have. And, you know, I think it changes things pretty quickly if we do have him here.
Well, guess what, Eric Hosmer? You've got him. Manny Machado signing a 10-year, $300 million deal. That is the biggest contract in professional sports history, the $300 million, $30 million per year. Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, was asked about the Machado signing with the Padres.
I have read the press reports. That signing hasn't been confirmed. But if, in fact, it turns out that what's being reported is accurate, I think that's a great thing. The Padres were active last year in the free agent market. Obviously a big signing with Eric Hosmer. This would be another one if, in fact, that's what happened. And I think it's good for baseball to have big stars present in some of our smaller markets and see those markets really being out there willing to compete for the best talent.
So the Padres have spent $500 million almost on two players the last 2 years, and they're not even a contender right now, but they have a lot of talent coming up.
$474 million they spent on free agency the last two years.
Yeah, that's more than the last 25 years combined.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they do have a young nucleus coming up in the minors they really like. That's one of the reasons why Hosmer, they want a leader in the clubhouse. That's why I think they overpaid for Hosmer.
Yeah.
But this is a bona fide superstar, Manny Machado. Manny Machado spent more days as a free agent than he did with the L.A. Dodgers.
Yeah.
And now he gets a $300 million contract. But here's the thing, Manny. You're not going to have that record for long. Bryce Harper is close to signing with the Phillies, according to reports. And they say that Harper will get more than Machado. There are reports 10 years, $330 million. Yeah, I know.
Oh, my goodness.
Listen, I'm going to tell you right now.
Bryce Harper is not worth that.
I agree with you. He's injury prone. I mean, he plays the game hard. I'll give him that.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way he plays. But
Machado's been more consistent.
Nobody's worth it. But,
Machado's more consistent. Yeah. Machado, I believe, well, I don't know how old they are. They might be about the same age. A lot of people say the Machado deal, you know, makes sense for the Padres because they got a young nucleus coming up. You got a guy that he's not 30. Like Albert Pujols signed a long-term deal at the, you know, too late in his career. Machado's still relatively young. He's a good defensive player. Obviously he's a good offensive player. He lacks hustle at times, which if I'm paying a guy $300 million, I want him to hustle all the time. So we'll see how it works out. But the Padres, the White Sox made a push, but I think Manny said, you know what, San Diego, warm weather, Chicago, yeah, I'll go to San Diego. So there you have it. Did you see a New York Yankees kid at spring training?
I don't want Machado on the Yankees.
I don't want Betts or Bogarts. And oh, my God, that was hilarious.
It's like taking Tom Brady off the Patriots and putting him on the Dolphins.
That kid was hilarious.
Yeah, he was.
I think he's, what, probably 8, 9? He had that little New York accent, too. Yeah. That made it kind of funny.
It just doesn't happen.
You know, it's cute when that kid does it, but if his dad did it,
they'd
be like, just shut up. The NBA is going to continue their season. It begins again tomorrow after the All-Star break. I think the biggest questions for the NBA, in my opinion, and we'll see if you agree, and that is, who's going to unseat the Warriors is my first question. My second question is, will the Lakers make the playoffs for many reasons? And my third question is, who's going to come out of the East? Those are my biggest questions, just as a general NBA question.
Oh, yeah,
is there something I'm missing that you would say you're thinking?
No,
yeah. Okay, so let's answer these questions the best that we can. All right, there are about 25 games left in the NBA season. The Bucks have a one-game lead over the Raptors for the Eastern Conference lead, so it's going to more likely be either the Bucks or the Raptors to come out of the East as the number one seed. I'm not saying they're going to make it to the NBA Finals. Then the Pacers are the three spot. Boston and Philly are tied for the four. The Nets are a game above 500. They're the six. The Hornets, seven. And the Pistons are eight, and they're four games under 500. So let's answer that question. Who comes out of the East that goes to the NBA Finals?
I think finals, when it's all said and done, Toronto.
You think Toronto?
Yeah. I think they've got what they need to get over the hump this year.
Okay. I am going to – I'll tell you what, the Bucks are really good. I've seen them.
I know. It's because Milwaukee's Greek the other the one. I'm not even thinking about the teams that you thought should have been going for it, Philly and Boston.
Yeah.
I don't think either one of them are going to make it.
I'm going to stick with Boston. With Boston.
And I would pick Boston over Philly if I had to pick somebody. But
Boston would have to beat Toronto or Milwaukee in a seven-game series, and they wouldn't have home court. I'll take Boston. You're taking Toronto.
Yeah.
It's because you still love Kawhi. Former Spur.
Listen, I would rather have Boston. Let's just put it that
way. Would you? Okay, all right.
Yes.
All right.
For Danny Green, I would like him to get there again.
Well, the Western Conference, Golden State's the number one team, a two-game lead over the Nuggets, who are the two seed. The Thunder are the three seed and pretty solid in that three spot right now. Portland, the four. Houston, the five. Utah, six. Spurs are at the seven spot, but they're tied for sixth, and they're only a game out of fifth and two games out of fourth. And they're also, the Spurs are only a game and a half of being out of the playoffs. The Clippers have the eighth spot. The Kings are a game back in ninth, and the Lakers are three games out of a playoff spot right now with 25 to go, which is really not looking too good for me. But you never know. You got LeBron. You still got the greatest player in the world. We shall see if he can turn it up a notch, which he's capable of doing. So in the West, who's the biggest threat to the Warriors in the West? I say it's the Thunder.
That's what I would say, too. Now, I mean, and I'm trying to think of somebody else, but I can't. I don't.
The Rockets give the Warriors some problems the way they play, but I think the Thunder would be the biggest problem for the Warriors.
I don't know. The Rockets aren't even as good as they were last year.
They're not.
If they couldn't have done it last year, I don't think they're going to.
Yeah, I agree.
They've got to – listen, it's fun, the streak that Harden's on or whatever.
Yeah.
That other people are going to have to score for them. They've got to be more balanced to beat the Warriors, and I just don't see that happening.
I don't either. The Thunder got two superstars.
Thunder can be that,
Westbrook and George. Adams is really good. A couple of younger players, Ferguson and Grant, have really come around. Then they got a guy that can spell Westbrook a little bit in Schroeder. I like the Thunder. They're a better team than some people realize. Now, we're overlooking the Nuggets, who have Jokic, who's an outstanding player. But right now, your matchups would be the Clippers at the Warriors, the Spurs at the Nuggets. That'd probably be the best matchup the Spurs could want, really, wouldn't it? I mean, would you rather go to the Nuggets, or would you rather go to Portland? Maybe you'd want to go to Portland. The Rockets would be at Portland, the Jazz would be at the Thunder. It would be a rematch of a series play last year, but there's no Carmelo, so I like the Thunder's chances.
The standings as a Spurs fan right now, if they stayed exactly the same as they are right
now,
you'd
be okay, wouldn't you?
I'd feel almost more comfortable with making a run, like making it to the Western Conference Finals.
Which means we're totally disrespecting the Nuggets.
The
and
two and
done.
Three, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you'd be on the opposite side of the Warriors.
Yeah, exactly.
That's important.
Saying, yeah.
That's important. So there you have it.
I don't think you want to be higher than six.
Okay, so we've answered two questions, right? The first question was, who's coming out of the East? I said Boston, you said Toronto. Okay, the second question, will the Lakers make the playoffs, yes or no?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay, I agree. I think they will, too.
As long as LeBron stays healthy the last 25 games or whatever it is.
I say they'll find a way to squeak in. Then the third question, will anyone unseat the Warriors?
No.
I'm talking West or East.
I don't think so.
Warriors are going to win it again.
Yeah.
Fourth time in 5 years.
As long as they've got what they've got and KD's playing there.
Okay. The good news
KD's
is
the the X factor, I think, in all of that with the Warriors' success.
If they stay healthy. Yeah. The good news is we will not have a rematch of the finals. I can assure you of that. Now, the Cavs are 12-46, so I don't think it'll be a rematch, Cavs and Warriors. It's amazing what happens when the greatest player in the world leaves your franchise.
Yeah.
How quickly you go,